Okay, we're back. Here's Robbie in Fort Worth, Texas. Hello.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, Rob.
How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Hope you are, too.
Well, I got a good one for you, a good little thing.
Oh, good.
Hello. This is John Chancellor. Tom, that's a great story.
Thanks.
Great story.
Thanks.
Hey, also, one other thing, a little bit of housekeeping here. The refrigerator story, could you tell that sometime soon again?
You mean about where at WABC?
I was taping it that night, and it cut off for some reason. I didn't get to get in on the good part of it.
Oh, okay. If I have time some night, I'll do it. It's kind of a long story.
It's hilarious.
I like the one about Chancellor, though. Hello!
Hey, Tom, the real reason I called was about live TV. I'm 34, and I'm old enough to remember the old Jackie Gleason show with Crazy Guggenheim and such.
Yep. 5, 4, 3, 2, 2, 3.
Hey, Tom, that's pretty good. It's
like the great Frankie Fontaine.
Hey, that's about as good as my Gregory Peck. Tom, it's nice to hear you. Anyway, Tom. Tom?
Remember you say, hey, you little Mr. Dinny.
Tom.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to get back to my senses here.
Yeah.
But, you know, everything today, it seems like it's so packaged. I can remember Jackie Gleason smoking a cigar and choking and coughing on TV. And
yep.
Remember the clock with a horse in his stomach?
Yep.
And he said, I mean, a horse with a clock in his stomach.
Yeah, right.
And, I mean, there's everything. Nobody sneezes. Nobody, you know, coughs. I mean, not that I want to see 30 minutes of it.
Yeah, but it'd be great to see somebody break wind once in a while, you know?
No, I mean seriously, somebody's just kind of, you know, saying, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
I mean,
just think. I mean, in the hours that television is on the air, nobody ever has to take a whiz.
Right.
You know, nobody ever has to use the facility. Nobody ever sneezes. Nothing ever happens that isn't perfectly planned and perfectly scripted and perfectly choreographed. It's boring is what it is.
Well, don't you think it'd be... Exactly. Don't you think it'd be great to say, hey, I got to step down the hall?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I mean, and you don't have to... I'm not looking for people to get dirty about it or get vulgar about it. Just say, excuse me, I got to step down the hall. That's very good.
Exactly. Hey, Tom, one other thing I want to... say that you did a great thing, a great service in defending, or not defending, but knocking the so-called Hollywood actors who were with their red ribbons, knocking Ron and Nancy and the Bushes and such.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. There was a great column. In fact, I've got it right here in front of me.
May you share it with us?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
It's written by, of course, don't I always. It's called, Is the GOP Getting the Last Laugh? It's written by Howard Rosenberg in the Los Angeles Times editions of yesterday, September 2nd, and it's about this very thing. People tuned in to watch what was supposed to be a celebration of humor on television. That's the way the show was promoted in radio and television advertising, a salute to the humor of TV. And all we saw was Dan Quayle getting beat up. But in fact, at one point, and by the way, I'm not a big Dan Quayle lover, but enough is enough, for heaven's sake.
No kidding.
Yeah, I mean, enough is enough.
He is the vice president, regardless of what one thinks.
And he's a human being, and he's got kids, and he's got a wife, okay? And at one point, Dennis Miller says, man, he says, Dan Quayle is really getting stomped tonight, and the audience went crazy.
Exactly.
Now, hold on a second, and we'll finish up on this, because there's a telling point in the Rosenberg article. Back with the rest of this and more of you on the toll-free exchange. Tom Snyder with you, folks, on the Thursday night get-together. Appreciate your listening. After station identification, we're coming right back. Doesn't this guy ever shut up? Anyway, I lost Robbie here, but Robbie I know is listening out there. Rosenberg writes, an estimated 29.5 million Americans watched at least a part of the Emmys Sunday night, and there's no telling whether among them there were a few hundred thousand voters who will carry negative Emmy memories with them into their polling places in November and who will make a difference in a close race. How must it have seemed to viewers from sea to shining sea watching a three-hour, 32-minute Fox telecast littered with the ridicule of the Republican ticket? How many viewers were repelled by this battering punishment of Quayle for his politically driven criticism of Murphy Brown for giving birth out of wedlock? You had to wonder what the response would have been from Hollywood itself were the Clinton-Gore ticket getting beat up on a national telecast. And I said this here Monday night, and Rosenberg writes about it yesterday. It was Murphy Brown creator Diane English who may have hit the lowest blow of all. Quote, as Murphy Brown herself said, I couldn't possibly do a worse job of raising my kid alone than the Reagans did with theirs, end of quote. You wished, and this is Howard Rosenberg writing, you wished her words were on the end of a yo-yo, she would have yanked back. That after thanking advertisers for resisting Quayle and remaining loyal to Murphy Brown, she would have acquiesced and left the rest of the rebuttal to Murphy herself when Murphy Brown comes back on the air September 21st for its new season. Then it goes on to talk about President Ronald Reagan's dysfunctional family and the marginal validity that that might have as a political topic, but Rosenberg winds it up by saying, knock the Reagans at the end of an Emmy acceptance speech? What was this, the Democratic National Convention Part 2? Very, very fine article. And as I said here, I think the Hollywood liberals did themselves and their candidates, Clinton and Gore, a great disservice by their questionable performance at the Pasadena Civic Auditorium this past Sunday night. Really not a shining moment in Camelot by any stretch of the imagination. Here's Charles in Kansas City, Missouri. Hello.
Hello. I've been a fan since the Tomorrow Show, and I'm going to stick by you no matter what.
Thanks, Charles.
Okay. By the way, I'm trying to put together an opportunity for you to do a nationwide show out of Kansas City if nothing else turns up.
Okay.
But what I called about was you were talking about the wind resistance factor of structures in Florida.
Yeah.
And I think something you said was that you can't make structures that are going to resist that kind of wind.
I said it's highly possible that you can't. I don't know if you can or can't, I said, but it would seem to me that you reach a point where you cannot design something to withstand a 200-mile-an-hour wind, 225. I mean, sooner or later, you get to the velocity.
Oh, sure.
That there's no technology that can design something to withstand.
Certainly, but something in the 100 range is definitely possible.
Oh, no question. But what about 150, 60?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For instance, reference the works of R. Buckminster Fuller. You know, the man behind the synergistic principle and the geodesic dome?
Yeah, absolutely. A man who once demonstrated to me on television in tortured syntax that the shortest distance between two points is not necessarily a straight line.
Depends on the curved space theory, but let's not get into physics.
Please. It was boring on television, even more so on radio.
Right. if you're familiar with the Wichita House, the round house he built in Wichita, Kansas.
I am indeed, sir.
Okay. That could withstand wind forces of 125 made out of materials and techniques available in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
With lightweight plastics and the stronger materials we have now, especially with metal bonded ceramics, withstanding up in the 165-170 range is not only possible, it's, as they say in the ad world, doable.
Doable. Okay, I went through the section in Newsweek magazine this afternoon as it pertains to the hurricane, and I did read that a lot of the codes down there were based upon, I mean, the codes were drawn based upon storms of far less intensity than Andrew.
Oh, certainly, certainly. Kansas City in 1977 had what we call the 100-year flood, right through the plaza down through Brush Creek. And they have redesigned that entire area to withstand something almost as strong as that, but not quite. So it could happen to us again. And if things left to government are never going to be as good as things left to the designs of people themselves.
Amen. Glad you called, Charles. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, sir. Here is Nina or Nina in Chicago. Hello.
Hi, it's Nina.
Nina. Okay.
Last night, Mr. King mentioned overpopulation was becoming a major ecological problem. I would like to suggest a hypothetical solution, one which would alleviate abortions, cocaine babies, reduce child abuse, and would also safeguard us from becoming overpopulated. What I'm thinking we should do is introduce a law that would mandatory birth control for teenage girls and also women.
You know, I can hear the feminists saying, why women? Why is it the women who must be responsible for this? What about the men? Why aren't they responsible or accountable for it?
Good question.
The other
Either
thing...
way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only problem you have with that is that in this society, you can't have something like mandatory birth control or mandatory sterilization. You know, in mainland China, couples are allowed to have one baby, and then if they want another one, they have to seek the permission of the government. I don't know if you really want to get us into that situation, Nina.
Well, okay, but then look what happened in China under the rule of Mao Zedong, how many people he murdered because of overpopulation. And, my friend over dinner called me a commie for suggesting this, but what is the worst of the two evils, murder of unwanted babies or the prevention of unwanted babies?
Well, obviously, the lesser of the evils, and in my mind, neither one is that great an evil. I don't see birth control as an evil. I don't see abortion as an evil, except when abortion is used as a method of birth control. I think that's just stupid. That's just cockeyed. Say, well, if I get pregnant, I'll have an abortion.
They're using that in Russia. It's
well, I don't subscribe to that at all. I don't, you know. But the problem is, while theoretically your idea is a good one, it'd be like saying, well, okay, when boys and girls are 16, they're going to be surgically sterilized, so they can't have kids. I mean, it won't go in America. It just won't go.
Well, medical science has come up with a device that it's an implant.
I know.
Yeah. And this would be great for teenage girls because right now we're having a epidemic problem with teenage pregnancies, and these girls later end up on welfare.
Well, it's a great idea, but I don't think it would wash in this country. Anyway,
just a thought.
Listen, I appreciate that. Shows you've been thinking, and we need more of that in America. Thank you for joining us tonight.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye, Nina.
Bye.
Talk to you soon now.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay. Bob, St. Augustine, Florida. Hello.
Well, nice to speak with you, Tom.
Nice to speak with you, Robert.
Well, I'd like to touch on an album I talked about earlier, I guess maybe 6-8 months ago, Paul Simon's The Rhythm of the Saints. And I really have to say something about one song. I think it's called Reach in the Darkness. And the idea of the song is that, of course, the title is taken off of those who are involved in, as it were, cultic activities and their use of rhythms and that sort of thing of their culture to, as it were, communicate with other types of entities that Christians don't need to be involved in. And the thing of it is that Reach in the Darkness, you have a tendency to believe that this is a way of coping with obstacles in life and dangers in life. And, of course,
What does this all mean? I don't get it.
Well, Psalm 91 says that God will rescue us and protect us from all harm.
Great. Believe me, I need that. I'm waiting for it.
Well, the thing I like to talk about is Bill Clinton. The thing of it is, he says barefaced that he's not for abortion and that he's pro-choice. But the thing of it is, he recruits Al Gore, who, of course, authored the Freedom of Choice Act, which makes abortions totally unrestricted. And it seems to me how...
Man, don't you get it that these guys... Bill Clinton and Al Gore are not going around this country saying, hey, everybody, come on, abortion's free, get it now. It's just not what these people are doing.
Well, the thing of it is that it is true that many tragedies do occur, and this type of legislation would make that happen. And he accuses our president of having no values, yet he lies himself.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. I tell you, folks, this kind of religious fanaticism, I have respect for your religion, and listen, I'm born and brought up Catholic, Franciscan nuns, Jesuits, but I mean, to babble on with this stuff that you're going to all burn in hellfire and damnation if you're pro-choice, I can't let go here. It makes me nuts. And people who are pro-choice are not saying, hey, come on, ladies, get in this clinic immediately and have this abortion right now or you're going to hell. It's not what they're doing. We'll be right back with more of you on the toll-free exchange after these messages from the local stations.
You're on the radio show, and I'm Tom Snyder on Service 60 WICC.
A Okay, we are back, and here is Linda in Norman, Oklahoma. Hello. You've been waiting a long time, Linda. Thanks for your patience.
Yeah, well, I've tried to call all week.
I know. I've seen you some nights when you didn't make it, and I felt badly about that.
Well, I was going to do a little bit of talking about the National Guard. Now, pre-World War II, it was a three-year enlistment, and a lot of the high school boys got in to make a little extra cash during high school.
Right.
So my husband was in for the 3 years, and they activated that 45th Division and took them in, and they had to let him out, though, before the war came along because he'd served his 3 years. So he had a scholarship to go to the big university, the basketball university, Mr. Iba, and they made them then sign up for a reserve, and he got a Marine Reserve. Then they took them.
Now, you know, I can't take his whole life story, you know.
I'm not.
Okay.
But anyway, but I have a Vietnam vet son, too. And we had friends, you know, that sons went in the National Guard and
right.
all that, too.
Yep.
So we don't talk about any of that, and it's kind of all water under the bridge, you know.
Amen.
And but we have a junior senator here, Republican, that wrote the platform for the Republicans.
Right.
He took a slot. He's from Oklahoma, and he took a slot in Kansas, which left the boys in Kansas, you know, up to be drafted.
Man, that's not fair.
No, that's not
fair.
That's
not playing by the rules.
No. So, but he thinks that's all right. But I wondered what the president's sons did then, too.
You know, that's a good question. They are of Vietnam age, aren't they?
Yes, they are. I've got my other one was called up for his examination, and he had a pretty bad football operation on his knee, and they gave him a status in case that they needed to call him for support, you know, somewhere
right,
else.
Right.
So my only two children. But another thing I had on my mind, there's been a book reviewed here. I don't know whether you've heard of it or not, Young Man in a Hurry.
No, I have not.
Haven't you?
No.
Well, it was written by a friend of Bill Clinton's, a schooltime friend from age 13 on, and he's a Republican and wrote this book about him.
Well, I can imagine what it says about Bill Clinton. I mean, the very title gives it away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But his name's Jim Moore. They've interviewed him twice on KTOK, and then they had him for a book signing, autograph signing thing.
A lot of people show up or not too many, or you don't know?
Well, I don't know. That's in Oklahoma City.
Yep.
But it was published by Summit.
Okay, Linda, appreciate the information. Thanks. Here's Ron in Houston. Hello.
Oh, good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Have you ever noticed that the people on the far right and far left are almost identical?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they can't deal with reality.
No, no. No reality on the left or the right lunatic fringe. Absolutely
and
none.
They have just their attitudes towards other people are just, you know, we don't exist. I mean, it's incredible. But you were mentioning the hurricane earlier. It's coming out now on some of the news reports I've seen that a lot of these dwellings were mobile homes, and that they're finding that the roof clips and such that are required on the roofs on these houses weren't there on a lot of the regular structures.
Right.
And of course, you know, once you get stuff blowing around, it doesn't take 140 mile an hour wind to cause a lot of destruction.
No, it doesn't. A 50 or 60 mile amount of wind. Once the roof is off, Katie, bar the door.
And have you noticed that all the bad hurricanes that we've had have had boys' names?
I don't think that's by design. I think
maybe all hurricanes really are women, and they're mad about having boys' names. I don't know.
Maybe.
I'm just curious. Is the economy in California really dropping down rather rapidly?
It stinks. It stinks. I'll tell you a story about that. You know, I went looking for some real estate here in Northern California a year ago. I looked at about 25, 30 houses. I bought one. The other 24 are still on the market.
Well, we do some business. We send some work out to other plants, and usually we'll send it out to ones within 500 to 700 miles. But the bids coming in from California have been 20% and 30% lower than they would have been say, a year ago.
More people are leaving California now than are moving in. Taxes are at an all-time high. The economy is at an absolute standstill. In fact, it's going backwards. California is in very tough shape right now. Ron, thanks for calling tonight.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
You being with us. Good night, sir. We'll continue with more of you on the toll-free exchange right after these messages. Okay, Margaret in High Point, North Carolina. Hello.
Yes, this is a woman in a hurry. I'm going to wash my hair and shampooed everything by the time. How you doing, Tom?
I'm fine, Margaret. How are you?
Great.
Good.
It was really nice to hear you make a comment about the Mr. Rosenberg's column and what you thought about the awards the other night. I also agree with you. I think there is a line that has to be drawn that's called decency. And, you know, the people that are producing these TV programs have to have sponsors. And as a consumer, I'm one of millions. I also can write to that sponsor if I don't appreciate, you know, things that's being said.
That's
and
correct.
I don't care who says it.
That's correct.
I mean, it doesn't make any difference to me.
Well, the point of it is that it's all a matter of what's appropriate here.
Right.
You know, I've said many times, when I go to the airport, I don't go there to make a contribution to a religious organization. I don't want to be bothered on the way to an airplane by somebody from the Hare Krishnas or the Catholic Church or the Holy Rollers or the National Jewish Foundation. I don't want to be bothered. If I want to make a religious contribution or have a religious experience, I'll go to a house of worship. I didn't tune in the Emmy Awards to hear what they thought about Dan Quayle and George Bush. It was not appropriate.
No.
It was not a political rally. It was a television show.
That's right. And they really should stop and think that who's paying for these TV programs? I pay for them every time I go in the market and buy a product.
That's correct.
I pay their salary. And, you know, there is a line, and it's called decency. And I think they overstepped their bounds. I think I agree with you. I think it's going to hurt. There will be a backlash. There's no doubt in my mind. And by the way, Tom, the plastic wrap does work beautifully in the freezer.
I know that, but then if you put it in the freezer, it loses its stickiness. It doesn't cling as well, which is the whole reason I buy the damn stuff to begin with, okay?
I have to tell you that, because every time I call, which is not that often,
yeah,
I know.
I'll tell you the other one I can't figure out, and maybe somebody can help me with this one. They got this new thing now, the Ziploc storage bag, right?
Yeah.
How do you lock those things shut? I can never get it started, you know, where you get the one groove and the other so it stays shut. I can't figure that out. Well, I squeeze, but, I squeeze, but it doesn't work for me. I'm not good at squeezing. I'm 56, for God's sake. Give me a break on this. You know what I'm saying? Jeez.
I'll just get you a twist bag. Forget it.
Now you're talking, Margaret. I'm glad you called. Thanks.
All right, bye.
All right, bye-bye. Here's our pal Fionn in Lancaster, PA. Hello.
Greetings.
How are you, young lady?
Fine. From the diamond-studded UIB microphone, Tom Snyder, with talent, an outright gift from God.
Thanks. Man,
I wouldn't mind being Belli's ex-wife. 18,000 a month I could handle.
Yeah, I could limp by on that, too. Listen, kid.
How do you think you'd look in drag?
Lousy. I tried it
last night, you would have the option to blow up the callers after 2 minutes.
Yeah, listen, I'm going to call you back tomorrow night. Get her number. We'll call her back.
I'd light the fuse.
Yeah, all right. I'm going to call you back tomorrow night. Hang on. Paul, get her number. Folks, tomorrow night we talk about what George Bush's sons really did to get all that money. Sweet dreams. Keep your eye on the prize, America, and thanks for listening, everybody.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, Harold.
Tom, first-time caller.
I'm flattered. Thank you.
I've admired you for a long time.
Thank you.
I think you're a great guy.
Thank you.
But I think you get too excited, man. Life's too short. You know what I mean?
I know.
Yeah, there's an ulcer waiting for you if you're not careful.
I know.
Okay, first, as a blind person, this is going to sound strange, but as a blind person, I watched that movie tonight. And...
Which one? The earthquake picture?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
They're right at the place here where they're all getting their diplomas and their caps and gowns. Like, how much more do I have to wait before L.A. really gets it?
Who knows?
Not much longer, huh?
I don't know.
Okay.
But did you see it tonight?
No, I'm just watching
it
off and on right now.
Okay. It was real difficult to follow as a blind person. Because there was so much action, so many things happening at one time.
Well, that's it. You depend upon the spoken word, too, don't you?
And my daughter went to bed at 10 o'clock, man, so she left me with the last hour by myself. You know what I mean?
She gave you the review, huh?
Yeah, me and my wife were out there saying, wow. And I, to this day, I do not know what happened to the... I know that the daughter was trapped in water. I know that the... I know they got her out. Okay. I'm assuming she was pinned down, but I can't tell you how she was pinned down. And the other question I had about that darn movie was, I know that the sniper finally got the one cop, I think he was a cop, and the other guy was coming to get him, and he didn't make it in time. And I don't know how that happened either. So if somebody wants to call and enlighten me on those two things, I think I have the movie together other than that.
Okay, thanks.
And my other comment, if I can make it quickly, is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is, if this, now, am I right that for the most part you are not allowed to take on board a plane any kind of sound device that is a receiver or any kind of laptop computer device unless they are approved specifically because of the harmonic carriers generated in those pieces of equipment?
I don't think you're allowed to take on board any kind of an FM receiver because they interfere with the navigational equipment of the aircraft.
Yeah, they have...
Laptop computers...
They generate carriers. So do laptop computers generate carriers on the FM band.
Yeah, well, this I didn't know, but I do know FM receivers are a no-no.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, I knew something existed like that. But my flying ability is limited to jumping off the porch railing and hoping I make it over the sidewalk. You know what I mean?
I got you, Harold. Thanks.
Well, you stay fantastic.
Thanks, Harold.
And it was really great talking to you.
Thanks, Harold.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Whew. Man. Al in Queens, hello.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah, Al.
Yeah, regarding the Metzger case, you had a call on that. Tom Metzger was not prosecuted, by the government to get him off the air. What happened was the parents of the murder victim filed a civil suit, and they were awarded damages. It's as if you say something about me over the air, and I lose my job.
Right.
The government won't touch it, but I can sue you, and I might collect.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Now, how much more would I collect for the loss of a son? It was a civil suit.
Exactly. I should have brought that up, and I didn't.
Okay.
Thanks, Al.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, bye-bye. Here's Wes in Madisonburg, Pennsylvania. Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom, over the last break, I was listening to the news, and Margaret Thatcher was on very vociferously saying that if these damn Iraqis don't get out of Kuwait, we're going to have to force them out with the troops.
Right.
How come she's making all the war rattling and we have the troops over there?
Well, because she is. Because she's not afraid to speak her mind, and she's speaking it.
But she doesn't.
And by the way, this is not the first time she said that. She's been saying it for quite some time.
I realize that, and it's we who have the troops. She has no troops over there to.
You know how there are some people that are real good at telling you how to spend your money?
Yes. Well, do you think she might have forgot about the American Revolution? I mean, we're not under her control.
No, she hasn't forgotten, but she's trying to show support for this country and for the president, George Bush.
Well, I wish she'd show it another way besides sending our people into war.
Yeah, like how about send 150 or 200,000 of your own troops over there?
Right, or perhaps send some of British Petroleum's oil over here instead of moving it from here to there.
Not a bad idea. And also maybe stop using so much oil from Iraq yourself, Mrs. Thatcher.
I would agree with that.
Thank you, Wes.
You're welcome.
All right, bye-bye. We have a very full agenda here with all of you on the toll-free exchange. We're at 800-248-0852. Here's a chance to hear the music play. We'll be right back after a station break here on the Monday Night Radio Show. You're on the radio show, and I'm Tom Snyder on Service 60 WICC.
A comment about Christmas.
Oh, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
They had stuff already on the shelves before they got the ghouls off at Halloween.
It's disgusting.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Well, I'll tell you what it is, my friend. The merchants are running a campaign now that they're going to have the worst Christmas, or that Christmas won't somehow be bigger than it was last year. So what they're trying to do is get us all into a buying frenzy. And they're trying to convince us that it's our patriotic duty to make certain we spend more this year than we spent last year. What they've forgotten is the country's in a recession and people don't have the money to spend this year.
That's true, and I will not be spending much money this year. I'm laid off.
Then no matter how much they advertise, you're not going to be buying like you did last year.
Well, I didn't buy much last year either. I was watching my pennies.
Good for you. Good for you. You know, I love Christmas a great deal. I love the whole holiday season, Christmas, Hanukkah, the whole thing. But I don't like the secular frenzy that we put ourselves into to go out and buy presents for everybody in the world.
You know, I used to do that. I used to go out and buy. And it depressed me so much that the last 2 years I've cut that out, you know.
Good for you. Good for you.
You know, it's just not worth it. If it's going to depress you, get out of it.
I agree with you. Thanks, Randy.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Troy in Carthage, Missouri. Hello.
Yes, thank you, Tom. I have Eve Arden, Armis Brooks, a Christmas program, and I'm sure you've heard it from your man that you mentioned a while ago.
Right.
Where Jeff Chandler is the bashful teacher, lays one on. He must really kiss her the way the audience laughs, you know. He must have really laid one on her, you know.
It's a very funny show on both radio and television.
Right, and then, you know, also, she appeared in the program Alice, you know, Linda Lavin, as a very tough TV reporter where she told the truth on TV no matter who it hurt, you know.
Right, right.
And that was very good. And, you know, this is quite a day. We're talking about Eve Arden. This afternoon, they buried one of my good old-time radio heroes, Everett Mitchell, in Chicago. You remember that? The National Farm and Home Hour. Every time he'd come on every day saying it's a beautiful
day in
Chicago.
And I hope it's even more beautiful wherever you are.
But sometimes you might say something like, you know, the snow is coming down so thickly you can't see 3 feet in front of you, but I hope it's more beautiful wherever you are. But Paul Harvey did quite a tribute to him today, and fortunately, I guess the weather was beautiful today for the funeral, you know. But I wanted to mention that. It made me wish I could have been in Chicago and kind of said goodbye to him myself.
Well,
he's one of our good old-time radio heroes, you know.
You bet. And I'll tell you who else was eulogized today in New York was William Paley at Temple Emmanuel. They had his service today.
Richard
Nixon was there, Walter Cronkite, Harry Reasoner, all the CBS News people. So it's been a day for remembering greatness, I'll tell you. I'm glad you mentioned Everett Mitchell here tonight because I've often quoted, it's a beautiful day in Chicago, and I hope it's even more beautiful wherever you are.
Right.
And now, do you remember the theme song of the National Farm and Home Hour?
Well, it was one of the Sousa's marches, Stars and Stripes Forever.
That's correct. You're absolutely right.
See, he was on every day at noon, see?
Yep.
You know, so you really got it every day. And that fellow was right. When I fly to my sister's out in Denver, you can't take a radio in your lap.
No.
You know, you have to have it in the suitcase,
That's
you know?
Right. That's
and
right.
You know, I don't like that, but it's the way it is. But I did want to mention good old Everett Mitchell today.
Sure, glad you did, Troy. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Bye-bye. Greg in Eugene, Oregon again. Hello.
Yes, good evening, Tom.
Good evening, sir.
Did you check your mail?
Yes.
Did you get my package?
I don't know.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I sent it to you some time ago. Maybe you might want to pull on somebody's shirt tail.
Okay.
Could you
give me a hint as to what was in the package?
Okay. I sent an article to you that I had told you that I was going to send to you, and also included a photograph in there, something that I think you may like to frame up in your house. It has to do with your hobby.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did get that.
Oh, good. Anyway, I just wanted to mention a couple other real things real quickly. Your friend David in Baltimore, I wish we had more people like him around. I know I've said this before, but every time I hear him on, the guy is just a breath of fresh air. I mean, he has so many enlightening things to say. It's unfortunate that we don't have more people like him with his kind of thinking.
And even if there were people who expressed the exact opposite point of view, who thought it through as clearly as he does, you're right. I would be more than welcome to have them on the air.
You know, I'm a little worried after this past election that after all the hoopla of people talking about moving the incumbents and trying to make changes and various things that affect all of us, I'm a bit worried that not much that changes is really going to happen, despite all the rhetoric.
I'm afraid you're right.
You know,
I'm afraid we're going to continue with business as usual.
It's scary. I know this much. I'm looking forward to '92, when George Bush comes up and for re-election and says, that he did this and he did that, I'm going to say, no, George, I'm sorry. You know, your time is up. You did your job, and it's time for somebody else.
The thing that I can't understand about our presidents, and it's true of all of them, these guys never make a mistake. I mean, Nixon didn't make any mistakes. Johnson made no mistakes. Carter made no mistakes. These guys, they all do it perfectly. I mean, they walk around as if they, and I'm putting them all collectively into one group, former presidents, they never did anything wrong. They never made a mistake. Nixon didn't do nothing wrong. You know, Carter was perfect. Reagan was perfect. Now Bush is walking around like, whatever I do is perfect. Like, the Catholic Church preaches that the Pope is infallible. Well, since when are these guys infallible?
Well, I heard a thing on another network just recently about it was about Reagan's memoirs, and somebody quoted a portion of the book saying that Reagan had stated that if he was had a chance to do it all over again, he would call Poindexter and North in his office to ask for an explanation of what happened.
Yeah, he knew what happened. Come on.
You know, is that to say that he's going to call William Casey from the dead and ask him what happened to?
Right. Yeah, no, I don't get it. You know, it's like these guys, you know, nobody can question George Bush. Like, you couldn't question Reagan or Nixon or Carter,
yeah.
Republicans and Democrats. To question them, you say, oh, how can you possibly question me? I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
All right, Greg, I'm glad you called tonight.
Okay, Tom, thank you very much.
Talk to you next time. Bye-bye. The 40 after station break is only 30 seconds off the mark. We'll be right back after this from the local stations.
You can fly!
Walt Disney's Peter Pan is now on video cassette with a $5 mailing refund. Just buy Peter Pan and any three boxes of participating Nabisco crackers and send in the proofs of purchase to get a $5 refund in the mail. But you'd better hurry, because at this price, Peter Pan might just fly off the shelves.
Here we go!
See details in store. Offer expires January 31st, 1991. Rated G. And remember, Walt Disney's Peter Pan is the perfect holiday gift.
Okay, on NBC tonight, Los Angeles shook for 13 minutes in the big one. Most earthquakes last, what, 30, 45 seconds? On TV, it's 13 and a half minutes. And now the local newscaster just came on and she said how the big one, what we can learn from tonight's movie on tonight's 11 o'clock news. I mean, they never stop. TV, they never stop promoting themselves and telling us how wonderful they are because they're on television. Laurie in Appleton, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Laurie.
You know, you were mentioning that you got excited when you said you had remembered Murray the K.
Yeah.
I just wanted to tell you, do you remember he used to say, Murray the K and the Swingin' Soiree? Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
But I'll tell you, he stole that line because it was there was a dance band, Sammy K, Swingin' Sway with Sammy K.
Oh, is that where he got it?
That's where he got it.
Okay, and then another one. Do you remember Cousin Brucey?
Sure do. Bruce Morrow.
Yeah, I'm from New York originally. I think he was locally on just ABC back then.
WABC, 77 New York.
I remember that so well. But now he has, I guess it's all over the country on one of the weekend nights. He has a, you know, an oldies time.
It's a countdown show, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he's also on CBS FM in New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a good guy, Bruce Morrow. I've known Bruce for almost 20 years. He's a good guy.
Yeah, I just wanted to refresh your memory on some of that. I wanted to speak to Mary because she was at a time in my life when I liked music like that, too, and I wanted to ask her if she was personally friends with any of the groups like the Chiffons or the Orlans.
You know, it's a great question. I should have asked her that, but I didn't.
Yeah. Okay, Tom, have a nice Thanksgiving.
Goodbye, Lori.
Bye-bye.
Bye, hon. John in Syracuse. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, John.
I don't know about the earthquake, I'm shaking myself. I know about this guy who's talking about Maggie Thatcher.
Yeah.
Hey, remind him that we have 160,000 troops over there also.
We have 160,000 troops where?
In the Saudi Arabia.
Oh, no, we have 225,000.
No, I'm talking about we from an English point of view.
Oh, you have 160,000 there?
Right. Oh, no, 16,000, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's a little bit different, isn't it?
16,000, but it's comparable with the population you have here.
Yeah, but how does it compare with the amount of oil that Great Britain uses as compared to what we use from Saudi Arabia and Iraq? I'll bet they use more.
They may use more, but the way the guy was talking is so that you had no right to say, and we're supposed to be in this together.
Well, yeah, we're in it together, except that we're in it more together than they are.
Tom, have you ever been to England?
Yes, I have.
So you know if you need a bathroom, you need a WC.
That's correct.
But the trouble is, in London, it can be confusing.
I know.
Because London WC is an area, like a zip code.
I know.
Well, Murphy was speaking to Mrs. Dunn in Ireland. And he says, I'm going over next week. I have a job in London. I can't turn it down. It's good money. She said, well, while you're over there, Murphy, could you call in and see my son, Nearly? Now, Nearly's been over there for a year now, and he hasn't written to me or contacted me, and I'm worried about him. So I said, certainly, Mrs. Dunn, where does Nearly live? She said, London, WC1. So when Murphy got to London, he saw a sign WC. So he walked through the door, saw another door, number one. So he knocked on the door, and the guy says, yes? Said, excuse me, are you Nearly done? He says, well, yes, I am, but I can't find any paper. Says, well, that's no excuse for not writing to your mother. Hey, we're killing with our jokes.
Very good, John. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, sir. That's the best we've had here in some time. Are you nearly done? Yes, I am, but I can't find any paper, which I thought was the punchline. He says, well, it's no excuse for not writing to your mother. I love it. I love it when they tell me funny stories. Gene in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hello.
Yeah. Have you ever seen a sign? It's been on television in New York City in the business district. It's got the national debt. And it's an electric sign, and it keeps going up just like a computer.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I've seen that 150,000 times.
Okay, well, my suggestion to you would be, what about you and other people in this country who are on the air, once a day, once a week, whatever, say the national debt is now so much, it's increased so much since last week, and then point out to people how much interest there is on that debt. Right now, it's about $12,000 per person.
It's a very good idea.
Okay, and that's 8% that they're paying more or less, okay?
Right.
So that's about $1,000 per person interest on that debt.
Mm-hmm.
Figure a family of four, you're talking $4,000 a year that the average family has to pay just to pay interest on that debt.
Just to service the debt without paying off one quarter. Yeah.
That's right, just the interest.
I know.
And what I have found is, I've talked to a few of my neighbors and friends around here, and they have no idea of what this thing is. They just don't understand it.
What, they don't know what the debt is? The deficit?
Yeah.
You got to be kidding me.
They just don't, well, they know there is a deficit, but they don't know how it's affecting them, like I said, with the $4,000 interest.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
And, I know exactly what you're saying, because the deficit affects everything. It affects the bond market, the stock market, interest rates. I mean, it affects everything.
Well, in fact, I talked to a banker. Now, I could be off on my numbers here. I sort of forget, but...
That's okay.
I asked him, if it was a family of four, $12,000, you're talking almost $50,000, okay?
Right.
$48,000. But I said, if you had a $50,000 mortgage on a home at 8%, how much a month to pay it off over 30 years? And I think he said like $600 a month. So think about that. If the average family were to pay this thing off, you'd have to make payments. Like I say, a banker might be listening, could give you an exact figure. But
but you'd have to make the payments of $600 a month forever.
But you would get it paid off in 30 years if we didn't keep going deeper in debt.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay. All right. In other words,
every family is in debt more or less $50,000.
I got you. All right. So each one of us, a family of four, we all have a $50,000 mortgage. Yeah, $600 for 30 years, you'd pay it off. Right.
I mean, something like that.
You're close enough, but you said the key thing, that's provided that they don't sink us any more in debt next week.
Yeah, this whole thing really frightens me. I don't know about you. It's going to kill us one of these days, and in fact, I think perhaps it's the reason that the Japanese are not over there helping us much, because they can say to us, hey, look, we hold all your bonds, you go do the dirty work.
That's right, that's right. And by the way, If our money becomes worthless, their investment becomes worth even more.
Yeah.
I don't know how. Let me see.
Or something else you might find interesting
Japanese
was in USA Today a couple weeks ago. But Saudi Arabia, because of the increase in oil prices.
Oh, they're getting rich.
they are only giving us something like $6 billion to help us out, and they're making more than that. They're probably profiting from selling us oil and still showing a profit. You know where I'm going here.
Yeah, I know where you're going. I'm trying to get back. Why would I say that if our money is worth nothing, the Japanese investments are worth more? I don't think that's necessarily so. Except that the... I'll have to think that through. I'm really...
Well, whatever, but I mean, my suggestion initially was on the debt, just keep bringing it up. You know, I'd say...
That's a good idea.
I would even recommend to people who have factories, payroll clerks, and this sort of thing, maybe put something in an envelope to the employees once in a while and say, did you realize, in fact, at $4,000 a year, that would be $80 a week.
That's right.
$80 of your pay... this week went to pay interest on that debt, something of that sort.
What people forget is that if this keeps on, the money in our pockets is going to be worth nothing. Zippo. Gene, I'm glad you called. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you,
all right, we will continue with more of you on the toll-free exchange. I'll try and sort out what I just said. Why would I say that if our money is worth nothing, foreign investments would be worth everything? Because if our money is worth nothing... the Japanese yen would still be worth something, the French franc, the German mark, that would all be worth something, and our money's nothing, they can buy even more. We can't even afford to buy our own country if our currency becomes so devalued that it's worth nothing because of this deficit. I think that's right. And it's late at night. Hey, what are they going to do? Garnish my wages? We'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, Tom Baudet from Motel 6 with something new for anyone who's never stayed with us. I call it Tom's Extra Tank of Gas Game. And considering the price of gas these days, it couldn't have come at a better time. Here's how it works. First, check into Motel 6. We'll give you a clean, comfortable room for around $24 in most places. A lot less in some, a little more in others, but always the lowest prices of any national chain. And probably a lot lower than where you were staying. Then take the money you save, put it in an envelope, and forget it until morning. Then let the game begin. Just like they do on those award shows, say, the envelope, please. Open it up, and by golly, there'll probably be enough money in there for a tank of gas. So take it on down to the gas station and fill her up. Of course, if you're driving something that holds about 300 gallons, then you might consider it Tom's free breakfast game or something like that. I'm Tom Baudet for Motel 6, where everyone comes out ahead, and we'll leave the light on for you.
Okay, we are back, and here is Kathy in Waukegan, Illinois. Hello.
Good evening, Tom.
Good evening, Kathy.
How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Listen, I know you're a diehard Packard fan.
Well, I'm not a diehard, but I do kind of like the team.
Well, I'm a Bears fan,
okay.
So I have a present for you. I brought back a Packers joke from Tampa, Florida. There was a divorced couple, and they were fighting over the custody of their child.
Mm-hmm.
So they were before the judge, and the judge looked at the little boy, and he said, well, my son, he says, would you like to go with your mother? He says, well, no, sir, Your Honor. He says, my mother beats me. He says, oh, my. He says, well, would you like to go with your father then?
I want you to know I hate this joke, but keep going.
He says, well, no, sir, he beats me too. He says, my gosh. He says, is there anybody you'd like to go with? Well, yes, sir, I'd like to go with the Green Bay Packers. They haven't beaten anybody in a real long time.
That's very, very funny, okay? We almost beat you guys, okay? We almost beat the 49ers last week, and now yesterday, did we get the Raiders or not?
Hey, they kicked some butt.
We kicked some butt yesterday.
But you've got to remember, the Bears are still on top.
Oh, listen, as a guy said yesterday, one of these great whizzes, I think it was John Madden or Pat Summerall, and I like those two guys on football a lot. You know, they're all talking about San Francisco, and they're all talking about the New York Giants, but nobody's saying a word about Ditka and the Bears are 8-1.
I know.
I mean, they got a great, great season going, and nobody said a word about it.
Their defense is hot. They are working together. They're having problems with Harbaugh right now, but hey.
Incidentally, remember the guy, Jim McMahon, the quarterback who was so hot he was on fire?
Oh, yeah.
Where is this guy now?
I really don't know. I don't care.
He's with Philadelphia? What, is he back up Cunningham there? Yeah, Bobby says he's with Philadelphia. I haven't seen him. Remember how hot he was?
Oh, man.
Yeah, but Chicago, you're right. They're having a great season, the Bears. They could go all the way this year.
Hey, Tom?
Yeah.
One last comment.
Yeah.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
You're out of here, Kathy. Woo, 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 woo. Very funny. She's a funny lady, okay? Are you nearly done? Yes, I am. But there's no paper. Hey, you should have written your mother anyway. Very good stuff. Tomorrow night, big show here. I forgot to look at the guest list, but hey, believe me, if we do it, it's big, or almost. Thank you all for listening. I hope you'll come back tomorrow night, same time, same station. I'm T.S., and you've been on the radio show for Monday night. Sweet dreams and sleep tight, America. Good night, everybody.
This is Hugh Downs for the U.S. Space Foundation, presenting Frank Sinatra and Willie Nelson.
William, it's obvious that you and I do not share the same tailor. What do you call that thing up there?
I call it my way, Francis.
Touché.
Right on.
But we do share the same feeling about the benefits of space technology, don't we?
That's true. It's led to a lot of things that have helped all of us, city dudes and country cousins alike.
Take a look at one. It's called medical imaging. The images it generates are in color and more detailed than X-ray. Even subtle changes in the small arteries show up.
They give a doctor a clearer picture of what's going on inside your body.
They can help him spot trouble without exposing you to harmful radiation.
And this medical imaging stuff is just one of the thousands of down-to-earth ideas that have come from space research.
What this casually dressed gentleman and I have found out and want you to know is a lot of what's going on up there
benefits all of us down here.
Space technology.
This is what's in it for you.
For more information, call 1-800-255-1000.